kids that have various physical problems from time to time, but it's hard for me to imagine the experience that these parents go through in caring for these children in a 24-hour-a-day setting. As one person said, that, you know, it's almost like their home is an ICU in many ways because of the medical attention that is required. There are a relatively small number of these children, but as I said, they are very expensive. And the folks who have had the health insurance have been greatly helped by that and have actually survived in many cases because of the health insurance. But health insurance has limitations. Health insurance runs out. And it's also people who don't have health insurance run into a particularly difficult situation. So what they came up with was a suggestion to do an assessment similar to the high-risk medical insurance pool that we have and create that kind of a pool for special needs children that are in this medically fragile category. The cost, once it's spread out among all the people and the insurance companies and the folks who are carrying that, is relatively small. And in fact, in one case they pointed out it would probably be a savings to some of the companies that are right now caring for you know, that happen to have these children on their particular accounts, and you know, spreading that over the entire insurance industry would be a lesser burden for all of them. Anyway, what struck me about that was that they're not asking for a lot. They're not asking to come in and have us pay for everything. They're not asking us to even take over the responsibility of the care. They're still willing to give the care, to take care of the children, to keep them at home, and to keep them in a loving environment. And what they're asking for is a bit of assistance because of the enormous cost that's associated with this, a cost that I don't think any of us would be able to bear on our own. So that's why I brought the issue forward, and I certainly encourage you to listen to the testimony, to consider what the options are, and to take positive action on the bill. Now, it has been brought to my attention that you do have some amendments. The dash ones were submitted by the folks that I've been working with that would say that the assessments would not be used to offset existing general fund money. The dash twos are a different amendment that basically changed the nature of the bill and suggests that the support should be funded through tobacco settlement money. My recommendation to the committee would be to pass the bill essentially as it is to Ways and Means and let that decision about funding be made in the Ways and Means process, whether it, you know, whatever the best appropriation avenue is. So that those bills and those amendments are before you, however, for your consideration. With that, I'd be happy to take any questions and encourage you to listen to the folks that are following.
Representative Lehman. Chairman, I was going to throw back. This is in light of a recent Supreme Court decision that talked about the need for mandatory nursing care for children in the school system. You know, is this a fund that needs to be expanded to cover a wide variety of the low-incident, high-cost children, whether they be in the school system or at home? Do we need to look at a whole fund out there to provide some coverage for these children and their families?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lehman, that's a good question, and I have heard that issue raised as far as what happens to children who go to a school setting and how they're cared for. And I am not sure if that's appropriate to address in this particular issue or if that's something that we should be taking a look at in the education budget as a separate line item, or also something that we're considering in the Revenue Committee for children that are defined as IEP or special needs, and funding those from the state level prior to getting to the distribution formula through the rest of the distribution to school districts. So I'm not sure if that particular issue is most appropriate in this. I see this as more relief and assistance for people who are caring for these children in their homes.
Any other questions? Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
Captain Wade has graciously volunteered to coordinate the testimony here, and so I will let her do that. Welcome.
Chair Cruz and members of the House Human Resources Committee, My name is Teresa Cody, and I'm from Aloha, and I'm fighting a cold, so I'm hoping that I can keep my voice through this. My son in the back room, he's a little redhead in the wheelchair. He's medically fragile. He spent the first 10 weeks of his life in the hospital, and then he was given 6 weeks to 18 months to live. He was sent home to die, and now he's 5 years old. Since the day that we brought William home, our insurance coverage would only cover 60 days of in-home nursing care, and then we were forced to impoverish ourselves in order to become low-income enough to be Medicaid eligible so that the state could cover the next 60 days. So every other 60 days, our insurance, we go insurance and then back to the state. My husband has been forced to pass up raises, bonuses, promotions to be able to keep our son at home. As a result of the excellent skilled nursing and the love of family and the partnership between the insurance, our family, and the state, William has thrived. But it hasn't been an easy thing, and it's been a lot of stress on our family. We never know if we will have nursing care the next month, and we don't know how long that we'll be able to keep him at home, and that's devastating to say the least to think about. William is not an only child. I have 3 kids, and there's been consequences to my other children and to my husband and I. The problem simply is this. There's a very small population of medically fragile children whose families are above the poverty level. These children require intensive skilled nursing care that costs about $140,000 a year just for the in-home skilled nursing. Oregon is one of few states in the nation that does not cover in-home nursing for medically fragile children that are above the poverty level through the use of a Medicaid waiver. Some insurance companies have tried to cover long-term skilled nursing as a favor to families. Other insurance companies don't provide this support at all. Due to the intense medical needs, nursing homes will not serve our children, and they don't belong there. Foster care is extremely limited, and pediatric intensive care units are our only other real option. They're too expensive, and too many of us have limited policies. We'd be forced to reach our cap in no time at all, and then where would we be? Most of our children were sent home to die, but because of improved technology, excellent skilled nurses, and love from families, they've continued to thrive. In recent years, in-home skilled nursing care for children with families has been severely cut. Many of these families are at risk of termination of their skilled nursing services. Families are literally up against the wall. They are not Medicaid eligible, and insurance companies threaten to cut or eliminate these services. House Bill 3147 would establish a medically fragile children's school fund that could generate fund dollars to be matched for Medicaid and create a Medicaid waiver for a small number of eligible families whose income is above the poverty level. The amendment before will assure that the current general fund dollars used for Medicaid eligible kids. It would spread the cost of services across the entire insurance population, and we believe this would be fair. It can happen to any family. Accidents happen all the time, and we didn't ask for this. We didn't know ahead of time that our children were going to be this expensive. House Bill 3147 will create a partnership between families, private insurance, and the state. This program will serve children below the age of 18 that meet the medical criteria already established by the Medically Fragile Children's Unit and be made Medicaid eligible. there are approximately 50 kids that are above the poverty level would be in this group. This will further help school districts by making this small number of children Medicaid eligible, thereby having the opportunity to use matching Medicaid dollars for their nursing care during school. Oregon needs a responsible solution. House Bill 3147 can maximize resources of family, state, and private insurance, and the bill could be the solution so that other families don't have to go through this. These families have already tipped their lives upside down and sideways. And I believe you've already been handed packets of letters of support from families and professionals that couldn't be here, and also testimony from those here today. Thank you. Are there any questions?
No questions.
Oh, Mr. Chair, I do have one. I do have one question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is skilled nursing defined, or how are you defining that? In other words, is that a person that, just anybody that you can find that would come in, or is this a person that has special skills, as an RN or an LPN, licensed practical nurse or registered nurse, that has special skills in dealing with kids that are medically fragile?
Chair Cruz and Representative Kremel, these are skilled licensed nurses, be them RNs or LPNs, that would have to have the skill involved in taking care of these kids. They're all very high needs, with respiratory complications, ventilators, and CPAP, and all of the things that come with them.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question. I understand that part of this need of nursing care is also to provide some respite for the families who are having to administer and through this. And I really, first of all, I want to commend all of you. And secondly, I think I'm going to get very emotional. As I understand it, your 24 hours is this responsibility, and part of your need is also to have some respite assistance, and that's where the nursing staff and that comes in. Is that correct? Is that a part of it as well?
Yeah, Chair Cruz and Representative Winters, our kids are 24-hour nursing care, although we still provide 8 to 18 hours a day of nursing care ourselves, without the assistance of a nurse with us. That would always continue. We don't like having nurses in our home all the time. I wouldn't say, I think respite care at this point is a dream. I mean, it would be nice that in the future, but we are looking at the basic necessities. Being able to sleep at night. My son is extremely time-consuming, and I can't leave the range of his alarms. He turns blue even on a ventilator, so I can't do anything else in the rest of the house, and I sure can't do anything with my other two kids or my husband unless I have somebody else to be with my son.
Hi, my name is Julie Wingle. I'm from Grants Pass, Oregon. I'm the parent of two children. My youngest son is a medically fragile child. I'm here in support of HB 3147. My son Eric is diagnosed with Beckwith-Wiedemann syndrome, and he has a tracheostomy tube to keep his airway open. Can you not hear me? Okay. He requires monitoring 24 hours a day, and he is on oxygen while he sleeps. He needs suctioning throughout the day and night, monitoring of his oxygen saturation levels while sleeping, and after he's bathed carefully each night, his trach site has to be cleaned and gauze changed. His medical equipment also requires sanitizing and cleaning regularly. He is covered under my husband's insurance plan, and we have applied for home nursing, and we have been denied. We have been taking care of Eric solely alone for 3 years now. We have researched every avenue for help and have not found any success. We are continually denied due to our income, even though Eric meets the medical requirements needed. It is a fact that the best place for my son is at home. But due to the demand of Eric's care, it is uncertain how long we can endure. It would be financially devastating for my family to obtain a skilled nursing care that Eric needs without assistance. My child has very demanding needs. This situation is not something that I asked for. I have no desire to live off the state. He's not my only child either, and my daughter does require my sole attention sometimes. Our family needs your support to find a solution to our problem.
Thank you very much.
My name is Kathleen Huestrick. I am here in support of HB 3147. I am the mother of two. My son Brian is 16, and my daughter Sarah is 15. Sarah is medically fragile. She has been ventilator dependent, since her premature birth and has intensive suctioning needs and cannot move on her own and therefore requires 24-hour one-on-one care. Sarah has a congenital neuromuscular disorder along with a severe seizure disorder, cortical blindness, and constant urinary tract infections. She is totally incontinent and has gastrointestinal complications, including chronic diarrhea, nausea, and vomiting. Her right hip is now permanently dislocated and causes great discomfort and is a real challenge to her caregivers as they try to position her. Our daughter has lived at home for the last 14 years and has received the best care available from our skilled RNs. She has never been hospitalized due to illness. This in itself speaks for the quality of care our daughter has always received. 3 years ago, our private insurance cut back on the nursing dollars they would allow for Sarah's care. My husband is self-employed, and I am the insurance carrier. I am a registered nurse, and I work 20 hours a week for a legacy health system in order to carry the insurance coverage. But we had been cut back to the point of only having enough nursing hours to cover Sarah's care while I was at work. I was forced to go days without any help, let alone any sleep, and I have been exhausted. I rarely get an unbroken night of sleep. We have very little family life. My husband and I literally battled for 9 long months with our insurance to allow us to continue to keep Sarah at home. There is nowhere for her to go. Sarah does not qualify for SSI or any help from the state due to our income. Therefore, she's not Medicaid eligible, and the only option for her care is the pediatric intensive care unit at Legacy Emanuel Hospital or medical foster care, which is far more costly than our home care. What family can afford to pay for the medical expenses of a child like Sarah? We love our daughter more than anything and want to keep our family together. If we do not receive adequate nursing care dollars for Sarah's intensive care needs, our family will have no choice but to seek out medical foster care for Sarah. This, needless to say, is breaking our hearts. Living with the uncertainty of this is very difficult, at the least. I am exhausted. I am emotionally and physically worn out. I cannot continue at this pace. We need help. Please help my family and others like us by supporting this bill. Please help us keep Sarah with us in our home. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. While we're making a change here, just let me say I understand the difficulty of some of this testimony, so if at any point you need to take a moment, feel free to do that.
My name is Sarah McIntyre, and I'm here in support of House Bill 3114. My son could not be here because he requires an ambulance and a stretcher whenever he goes anywhere, but I do have pictures. I currently reside in Vancouver, Washington, with my husband and my three children. My oldest child, whose picture you'll see, is medically fragile and requires one-on-one care. He's ventilator dependent. He has frequent seizures. He has a permanent IV implanted in his chest. He gets fluids several times a day. He has intractable seizures, and he's fed through a tube in his stomach. He requires a wheelchair for whenever he's up and out of bed. Has a lot of medical crises. He's a 14-year-old boy who's trapped in a very, very sick body. He's also a boy who just wants to be with his family, and his family wants to be with him, which is why we've struggled to keep him at home over the past decade. Our family lived in Gresham, Oregon until 1993, when we moved to Vancouver, Washington, to receive a Medicaid waiver. The waiver made Matthew eligible for a medically intensive program, which provides him currently with in-home nursing care. When I asked for help in Oregon, I was told that I needed to impoverish my family in order for him to qualify for Medicaid. And then my choices after doing that would be a skilled nursing facility or to continue caring for him by myself. My husband and I knew that we could no longer continue to provide the intense care that he needed by ourselves. We were both exhausted from being up night after night with him. That's when we decided that we would move in order to preserve the integrity of our family. We left our home, our extended families, our friends, our community. After moving to Vancouver and receiving nursing care in our home, we were able to see the impact that not having care had on Matthew's two small siblings. Because I was the main caregiver for him, I wasn't able to properly parent them. There were many days when Matthew was in crisis for hours at a time, and the little ones were fending for themselves. The two-year-old should never have to prepare bottles for her newborn baby brother because she has to, because her mommy is trying to put in an airway and start an IV on her brother who's having seizures. And a three-year-old should never have to help her mommy hold her brother down to get an IV started because there's no one else to help her. And toddlers should never have to take her mommy trying to wake her up because their brother's having seizures and he's turning blue and their mommy can't wake up because she's too exhausted and sleep-deprived. And a kindergartner should never have to be late for school day after day because her mommy just couldn't get out of bed to take her to school. Today, Jessica's 9 years old and Christopher is 7. For the past 5 years, their brother has had a nurse in the home, and they have had a mom who isn't too tired to be a mom. It breaks my heart to think of what they've had to endure during their early years because there was no nursing care for their brother. How many families are out there right now struggling and suffering as we had to do because there was no help? Parents who want more than anything to maintain the integrity of their family. There's no easy and simple solution. Very expensive to provide one-on-one nursing care in the home, but the alternatives are just as costly, if not more. Even if a parent did want to place their vent-dependent child in a facility, there are none currently that will take them. Such a child could live in the intensive care unit at either of our children's hospitals at a cost of about $100 an hour, And believe me, my son has been there. It costs about $35 an hour for in-home care. Children tend to be healthier when they're cared for at home, which in turn saves money because they stay out of the hospital. Keeping children at home with their mommies and their daddies and their brothers and their sisters is also the right thing to do. It's simply how it's supposed to be. So please support House Bill 3147 and keep families together. Thank you. Questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Tell us how Washington is different.
Washington has, first of all, what they call a CAP waiver, which is basically a Title 19 waiver, and it's for children who have developmental disabilities, and they qualify for Medicaid without the income factor. And if they have that, they also qualify for what they call the medically intensive program, which is set up to provide in-home nursing care. And the idea behind that is to keep children out of the hospital because it actually saves Medicaid money.
Any questions? Go ahead.
Chair Cruz and members of the Human Resources Committee, I'm Chris Thomas. I'm from Portland. This is my son, Eric, and Eric had a few words he'd like to say today, and I'm going to help interpret. Sometimes it's difficult to understand.
Hello, I'm Eric, and I am 14.
Hello, I'm Eric, and I'm 14.
I live in a house with my mother and my brother and my dad. How are you and Tweety?
I live in a house with my mother and my father and my cats, Lemieux and Tweety.
I'm going to school, and I'm having a heck of a good time.
I'm going to school, and I'm having a heck of a good time.
I go to Whitford Middle School, and I'm in the 8th grade.
I go to Whitford Middle School, and I'm in the 8th grade.
I have a girlfriend and lots of help.
I have a girlfriend and lots of
help. I've been in a wheelchair and been on a ventilator all of my life.
I have been in a wheelchair and been on a ventilator all of my life.
I've had to end up in the hospital.
I have had to end up in the hospital a few times because of bugs like pneumonia, blood draws, or surgery.
Being in the hospital is no fun.
Being in the hospital is no fun.
I'm very lucky to have my mom, my dad, and my nurses. There's such a big care of me that I don't have to end up in the hospital.
I am very lucky to have my mom, dad, and my nurses take such good care of me that I don't have to end up in the hospital.
I hope I don't lose my nurses, because if I did, I would be sad because I would never get to see my kids ever again because I would have to go to the hospital.
I hope I don't lose my nurses, because if I did, I would be sad, because that would mean I would never get to see my kitties again, because I would have to live in the hospital.
Please, please help me keep my nurses. Thank you.
Please, please help me keep my nurses. Thank you.
Any questions?
Representative Pearson.
Thank you, Eric. I really appreciated hearing your comments, and I'll be interested if you have something more to say. What I want to respond to is we hear from people testifying how difficult the job is for taking care of medically fragile kids. We hear about how much more costly it would be if they were cared for in a hospital setting instead of at home. But the most important thing to me, Eric, is the cost to you. You don't get to stay at home, and how that would make you feel as a person if you didn't get to stay at home.
I totally agree with you.
I totally agree with you.
Because I'm very sad if I had to live in the hospital, because that would mean I would never get to see my dad or raise them ever again.
It would be very sad if he had to live in a hospital.
Senator Taylor.
When Eric goes to school, does he have a nurse attending him there?
Yes.
Is that at your expense, at the expense of the school, or how does that happen?
The school district pays for our private nurse through the agency that we hire our nurses through.
Senator Crummell?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have one question for Eric. Eric, you mentioned the kitties. What about the girlfriend? Do you think she'd come and see you? I mean...
Huh? Hold on. Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
As long as it wasn't a school day.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Any other?
Okay. You've just heard stories about families, and you have a packet of letters of support from families and professionals. You've heard stories of struggling and sacrifice, and stories of unconditional love for their special needs children. So much love that these families didn't think twice about raising and caring for their medically fragile child at home. That's because that child is a part of their family. By choosing to raise that child in the home, the family gave up what most would consider a normal life. They don't get to take vacations. They can't drop their child off at the grandparents or call a babysitter for an evening out. These children require round-the-clock, 24-hour-a-day care, the majority of which is provided by a skilled registered nurse, and the remainder the family provides. Most families are lucky to find time to sleep through the night, to keep up on laundry, to do the grocery shopping, or pick up medications and supplies needed for their medically fragile child. And a lot of families have other children, too, that require their love and attention. As one of these families, I can say we did not ask for this. We didn't ask for a medically compromised child. This was not our dream when wanting to start a family, and nobody would willingly choose this lifestyle. We do know that our children are very, very expensive, and we would give anything if they weren't. Because of the costs involved, we are stuck between a rock and a hard place with no place to go. No family can afford this, no matter what their income is. We're talking about almost $144,000 per year for nursing care alone. This is expensive, but the intensive care unit of a hospital or a medical foster care home and the loss of our children are far more expensive. This is a cost that is difficult for the insurance companies to cover, and the state cannot afford to carry the burden of costs either. We have been told that this is not the appropriate mechanism to raise the dollars. But no one has been able to show us where there are dollars available in this legislative session. That includes the tobacco tax, which isn't even available until the year 2000. Living day by day with the uncertainty of whether our children can continue to live at home is at the least agonizing. Wondering what the next battle will bring, or if we will just be told that's it, there is no more coverage. Please don't let families continue to be in the position of having to make the ultimate sacrifice of giving up their child so that that child will receive the necessary care needed to survive. Please let the families take back the basic human right of their having their children at home where they belong. We're asking you to please support us by passing House Bill 3147. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Cruz. Mrs. Thomas, if you had to make that choice and to put Eric in foster care, wouldn't the state end up having to pay for that anyway?
Chair Cruz and Representative Knope, yes, exactly. The state would carry the full burden of cost.
So basically we're talking about a situation that taxpayers or the state, which is taxpayers, is going to have to pay the cost one way or the other. The difference is one way they get to stay at home, the other way they don't get to stay at home.
Well, I need to back up a minute. The hospitalization would be covered by the insurance company. The medical foster care would be covered by the state. In-hospital care is covered. It's a covered benefit.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of questions for you, Ms. Thomas. In-hospital care is paid for by your insurance company or by what mechanism? Is it the insurance companies?
Chair Cruz and Representative Crummell, it is in-hospital. That's a basic benefit in the insurance plan.
Okay.
In-home nursing is not. So children are covered to live in a hospital.
Okay.
By the insurance company.
And if I may, one other question. I quickly calculated out, and I believe you said that the cost per day was $35 a day.
Per hour.
Per hour. I very quickly calculated that out, and I'm having a hard time understanding how you kept the cost at $144,000 per child, because $35 an hour times 24 hours times 365 days is $306,600. And so I applaud being able to keep it at $144,000, but I just want to make sure that doesn't end up cutting things short.
Right. Actually, there's Dr. Tina Kitchen is here today, and she would be the person that could best answer that question.
Okay.
And how the figures were pulled somewhat from the Medically Fragile Children's Unit figures, and they've done a very good job at lowering the cost, and Dr. Kitchen would be able to explain the mechanism of that a little better.
Okay. And may I follow up one more time? Thank you, Mr. Chair. With regards to the insurance, kind of going back to the insurance companies, do your policies have an aggregate, a lifetime aggregate, or are they open?
Some do, and some are unlimited.
Okay.
It depends on each individual policy.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to follow up on a point that Representative Knope had, and he mentioned foster care. Would foster care also have the skill level that you seek as another option?
Yes, they have registered nurses. They also use nurses' aides to help. So the care, each home is individual. They do what they call delegation. So there might be one RN with five children, and she might have three helpers.
What is the cost of that care?
Medical foster care can run up to $19,500 a month.
So that cost is still greater than the cost of if you had the child at home with you.
Yes.
In addition to the whole love and all the other nurturing kinds of that.
Right. Yeah.
Thank you.
Representative Knope.
Thank you. I think everyone has testified so far has said that they have they're the main caregivers for their child. So that $35 that we're talking about per hour for nursing care wouldn't be 24 hours a day. It might be a couple hours a day or 8 hours a day, but never 24 hours a day.
Chair Cruz and Representative Knope, that's correct. Although some families do receive 24-hour-a-day coverage, it depends on the status of the child. We've had 24-hour coverage ourselves when my son has been acutely ill with pneumonia. He still receives better care at home. He gets the one-on-one care with the people that know him. For the most part, families do provide between 8 and 12 hours a day of care themselves for their child. So the cost is, I think for an 18-hour day, it averages about $750 a day for in-home nursing.
Questions? Thank you very much.
Chairman Cruz and members of the committee. I'm Bill Nichols, a pediatric pulmonologist and a pediatrician in private practice in Portland, Oregon. And I know many of these families from having worked with them and others by reputation. I was asked to come and testify today on behalf of these families, and I'm more than happy to do it because I think this is a critical area or some gap in our health care coverage. I continue to be impressed always by these families, their ability to care for their children. They really want their children at home. They take the best care of their children, and as pediatricians, all pediatricians want the children at home. I think over the years there's been a change. I've had 18 years of practice, and I've watched things change over time. And initially, these people were cared for in the hospital if they were technology dependent. There would be eventually some realization that it might be less expensive to be home, and if the parents wanted to and worked towards that, there would be an agreement to transition the patient to home. This worked well for a long time. I think the rise of managed care has affected this some, and just the general contraction in the health care budget. But at this point, a lot of these families are stuck. Their insurance companies do not really want them on their policies. They're looking at every single cost before they might negotiate once or twice a year for certain costs. Now it's monthly, every 6 weeks somebody's reviewing how they're spending things. Primary care physicians don't particularly want them on their panel because these are very expensive patients and make their profiles look bad. And to the extent that now these patients are being viewed as costs by both the insurance company and the families, it's not good for the child either. So I think something needs to be done. I don't know if this bill is the best. It looks to me like it's certainly a step in the right direction. But there's definitely a crack in our healthcare system here that's not being filled at this point.
Any questions?
Just a comment. It seems to me, Dr. Nichols, that it's a plus that we could leverage some funds and participate as we have in other ways in Oregon, under a Medicaid waiver.
Yes. I don't mean that there's none. Yeah. If families can impoverish themselves, Medicaid steps in nicely and helps. And there are some ways to help before that. But it's tough if you want to remain to be an insured, employed person and take care of yourself. You're not getting much help in this with insurance.
Senator Piercy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is, from your experience, have you seen children who are in home and children who are out of home, and differences in how they thrive and what a difference it makes for kids to be able to be at home?
Right. I think the foster care or some of the nursing care homes for children that are less technology dependent are very good. I mean, they're filled with good caregivers who want to do the best, but it's not the same as being in home with a parent who really loves and wants their child there. Some of the foster parents particularly are excellent, and they do the best they can, but there's still a difference. There always would be, I think. So I find that children thrive best in their home, second best probably in foster care, third best maybe in an institutional, non-hospital care, and last in a hospital. They get excellent medical care in a hospital, but it's not an environment for a child to grow up.
Brandon Winters.
Thank you, Dr. Nichols. One of the things that we've heard in the testimony, and I don't know if it's a common thread, but it was that the individuals were sent home to die. And through the nurturing and the care, we had Eric and heard other testimonies. And do you attribute that to the fact that they're home and the combination of care that's given?
I think there's many factors there. I think, some children, I think we really didn't know 10, 15 years ago what the long-term prognosis was for children on home ventilation. If you put a child on a ventilator at home, how long would they live? We didn't know. That was the beginning, 15, 20 years ago, was the beginning of that whole endeavor. So I think a lot of times some prognoses that may have been made early on were based on if your child wasn't ventilated, this would be a fatal illness. There are other times, though, where supportive care was offered and the home ventilation was a step expecting pneumonia or something to happen. And I think it's a testimony to the care by both the family and the caregivers at home that these children, by and large, don't get pneumonia. They don't have severe complications. And a lot of the children who have neuromuscular disease or nervous systems other than their muscle support system are developing fabulously.
Medically, are we also thinking that the rethinking hospital versus home and some of those other, you know, we used to stay in the hospital longer. We used to think that the only one that could provide care was inside of those structures, and I think we're beginning to make some shifts there as well.
Oh, no question. I mean, the hospitalization rate for every single illness and disease in the state has decreased incredibly, and these are involved with that as well. When I first began training, there was no option for home care for children that were on ventilators for neuromuscular disease or other things. There were several, when I trained in Colorado, there were several people who lived in the children's hospital there. They'd been there for 5 or 10 years, and that was their home. Those children actually subsequently have been moved to a home situation as well. So I think it's part of the whole movement out of the hospital that this was involved with.
So the gap, if you will, is that we haven't moved the rest of the pieces with as we shifted to care.
That would be a good.
Good turn to Tercer.
Thank you. It just occurs to me as we have this discussion that we're talking about 50 children that are medically fragile that we would serve if we pass this. But wouldn't you also think that there are a lot of them that are now in the other settings that if they had an option to not be in those settings, how many of those would be at home if there were more supports for them?
I don't know exact numbers. Mm-hmm. My guess, just from what I can see, is that there aren't that many more. Most of them are already home, and parents are assuming the care somehow or scraping together whatever needs they have. There are not, that I'm aware of, a lot sitting around. There may be a few that are on borderline. There might be some you'd pick up.
Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you very much. I think I'd like to have Dr. Kitchen come up to kind of talk about some of the questions, the funding questions that we have.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tina Kitchen. I am the medical director for the Office of ED Services of the Mental Health and Developmental Disability Services Division of DHR. I'm more than happy to answer any questions you may have. I'm the supervisor of the current medically fragile children's unit.
Well, thank you, Dr. Kitchen. Let me go ahead and throw my question back out there. We received testimony a few minutes ago, as you heard, that it's approximately $35 an hour, and I just use that as the amount, I guess. And in the information that we've gotten, they're asking for basically about $144,000 per child. And if you take $35 an hour times 24 times 365, that's $306,000 a year. And then the point was made relative to the fact that, you know, a lot of families spend 4, 8, or more hours per day working with their child. So I went ahead and took a third off. We're still down to $204,000, which is a $60,000 gap between the request and what I think could be perceived as being the amount that it takes to support these kids. And I'm just wanting to make sure that you know, if there's an amount that's going to be asked for, that it not be held down to the point where the help is there, but it's not really the help that they need. And so if you could address that, I'd appreciate it.
Chair Cruz, Representative Crummell, the figures that you have in front of you is a best guess. We're not talking currently within the medically fragile children's unit. We do not pay for 24 hours of nursing services for any child throughout the state. We have a scoring instrument that assesses the child based upon their nursing and clinical needs, and then based upon that scoring, they get a level of services. And so a lot of these families are being asked to take on significant hours a day, and for some families, for a lot of families, all we pay for is about the 10 hours of service a night to allow these families to sleep. The other piece of it is that we don't pay $35 an hour. We have negotiated a lower rate with the agencies than that, and we have the flexibility for having the parents hire their own nurses. And if you don't go through a nursing agency, but have the parents hire their own nurses, they frequently get a better deal even than what we would pay for an agency. So I believe that it's about $12,000 a month level of service won't meet every children's needs within this population that we're talking about, but as an average, I think it's a fairly good number.
Follow up? Thank you. So really you're looking at the 144,000, I mean, two things, I guess. Let me finish one thought first. You're looking at the 144,000 as being kind of the average that it would cost?
Chairman Cruz, Representative Kremel, yes.
And then follow up? Mm-hmm. So there is some built-in flexibility then, so that if you had a child with higher needs, they could be met, and also if you had a child with lower needs, they could be met.
Chairman Cruz, Representative Crummel, yes, within the system we have but the parents actually have worked fairly hard on writing the administrative rules. We have a way of giving families based upon the needs of their child different amounts of services depending upon how intensive that child is and how many services they need. We also have then the flexibility that when the child is acutely ill or coming out of the hospital or has new care needs, we can bump it up for a period of time to teach the parents the new techniques that they need to have to take care of their child safely.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Within your flexibility, because we heard testimony that their individuals would have to reduce their level of income in order to qualify for some of the services, are you saying that they can't, you do have flexibility to waiver some of those?
Mr. Chair, Representative Winters, currently we serve Medicaid-eligible children only. We can apply from the federal government for what was called here up in Washington as a CAP model waiver or a model 200 waiver, or through a TEFRA amendment, we can essentially make a class of child Medicaid eligible while ignoring the family income. So what we would be doing is taking this amount of money raised, however, if you know the legislature decides pass this bill, and matching it with Medicaid funds. But currently, we do not have the funding to do that.
So that I understand it, that it is, you can, if we give you the go-ahead, you can request a waiver from Health and Welfare. I don't know what the new federal acronym is, but you can get a waiver from them that would allow Oregon to be in the same position as the state of Washington. Is that correct?
Chair Cruz, Representative Winters, the answer is yes. We would have to negotiate with the federal government over that, but we're one of very, very few nations that do not have that ability right now.
How many states have the waiver?
Chairman Cruz, Representative Winters, my understanding is that we are one of three who do not, but I do not know that for a fact.
Do you know why we drug our feet?
Mr. Chair, Representative Winters,
don't talk down.
I have my own guesses, but I think that's strictly a guess.
One more. Okay, Representative Crump.
Only one more, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much. Dr. Kitchen, is IDEA, which is the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act of 1997, is it by any chance part of the funding mechanism? I mean, we've got Eric that is going to school, and so he's got a nurse. Is part of his help coming through the IDE, through the IDEA funds, or are they strictly coming from human resources? And he wouldn't qualify for IDEA funds, or his school district wouldn't.
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, you're actually raising a very good issue here. First off, Eric is not funded by the state at this point, and I'm not sure exactly where Eric gets his funds. The medically fragile children for Medicaid-eligible children does not supply nurses into the school system, and that is usually paid for through local school district dollars. IDEA 97 and the new recent Supreme Court decision has said that that is a related service, and there is discussions, I know, between the Department of Human Resources and the Department of Education on who's appropriate to be paying for related services. But this, the dollars that you, that would be raised here do not consider including a school day in part of that funding.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm going to close public hearing on House Bill 3147 and open a work session on House Bill 3147.
Chair, I would move the dash one amendment to
the 3147. Representative Piercy has moved the dash one amendment. Is there any discussion, questions? Representative Cromwell, or Knob, I'm so used to him asking the questions.
Yeah, I received a letter from a couple of folks in my district, and they happen to be Eric's grandparents. And they're obviously very supportive of this, and, you know, it's real easy for me to vote for this bill because I think it's important. You know, having three kids of my own, I can't think of anything that, you know, at any time that you'd ever want to lose your child because you couldn't afford to pay. So I think, you know, I can't imagine anybody not voting for this. And the Senate, the Ways and Means, and let's figure out how to solve the problem.
Any other discussion? Are there any objections to the dash one amendment?
Ask a question?
Yes.
Mr. Chair? I don't understand why they're changing this from the money's collected will go to it to the money's collected will not.
Yeah. It's just so it is the exclusion of. So. Are there any objections to the dash one amendments? Hearing none, the dash one amendments are approved.
Chair.
Representative Piercy.
I move 147 as amended to the floor, Ways and Means.
Representative Piercy has made the motion. Any discussion? I have some, and basically there are dash two amendments, and I want to thank the members of the insurance industry for the hard work they put in on this. The dash two amendments make reference to funding this out of the tobacco settlement. I think that conceptually that's a really good idea. We have some spatial disconnects with that because we don't know when that money's coming. And in reality, that discussion does need to happen in the Ways and Means process. I talked to them, and they are willing to have that discussion down there in the appropriate forum. So thank you, gentlemen and ladies, for your hard work. And we should have it on the record that the insurance industry is also concerned with this population and is very interested in finding the proper way to serve them. And having said that and hearing no further discussion, Clerk, call the roll.
Representative Winters.
Aye.
Representative Taylor.
Aye.
Representative Kirsten.
Aye.
Representative Morissette.
Aye.
Representative Crumble.
Aye.
Representative Hill.
Aye.
Representative Lehman.
Aye.
Representative Close.
Aye.
Chair Cruz.
Aye. House Bill 3147, having received the required majority, it's passed and is on its way to Ways and Means. Thank you very much. Okay. Nobody likes me. Okay. I'm going to open a public hearing on HJR 62. Do you want to talk about it, Janet, or should I?
Why don't you go ahead?
Right, why don't I go ahead?
Everyone should have a copy of the report.
Yeah. We will take just a minute, committee, while the room shakes down.
While the audience pays.
Oh,
good.
Oh, no, I didn't. Oh, I took red my agenda.
I don't think you're going to have any trouble. We don't have a resolution.
No, I think you should just take a moment on me.
And there's also a resolution coming from the Senate that...
This is when people get in trouble usually when this...
Yeah. And they're supported...